This is the Larry Mueller Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jill Najoe. Larry is out with a spring cold today, and we are all wishing him a speedy recovery. Now, our topic today is a little more serious than a cold, and we're talking about medical directives and advanced health care plans with our first guest. With us are Dr. Tim Jessick, a doctor of osteopathy and palliative medicine. He's a palliative medicine physician who also teaches at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and Sarah McGalty. I was going to get that wrong. I knew I was going to get it wrong. I'm sorry, Sarah. Sarah Micheletti, right?
That's it.
Micheletti. I got it. Micheletti. Ryu, an attorney at McCarty Law LLP in Appleton. She specializes in estate planning and elder law. So what questions do you have about making your health care plan? So join the conversation and give us a call at 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email, and that's to talk@wpr.org. Sarah, Dr. Jessick, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. We really appreciate that.
Thank you for having us, Jill.
You bet. Important topic. We try to cover it every year. You guys are new to us. So let's talk a little bit about you just so we kind of know your background. Dr. Jessick, excuse me, talk a little bit about your background for us.
Sure. Thank you so much, Jill. This is a great opportunity. As you mentioned, I'm a palliative medicine physician. So I really talk to patients and families that have chronic, serious, and life-limiting illnesses. So really good advanced care planning, a lot of discussions by physicians and patients and families is just so, so important. So by the time I see them, maybe towards the last year or two of life, we have some of those discussions and decisions made. So super important topic today.
Okay, and Sarah, how does this fit into what you do in your job?
Yes, thank you, Jill. Thanks for having us. I'm an attorney. I have been practicing for almost 2 decades now. I specialize in estate planning, guardianships, probate, and elder law. I help families prepare for the possibility that one of them, that people will become incapacitated. I help people when they don't make good plans for when that happens. And that's a focus of a lot of my practice. I hope that we can help people communicate decisions in advance so that we don't have to guess about what people's wishes are.
Right. And I think a lot of times we think about this and we think about those who are elderly in our family, but that's not necessarily the case, is it? Dr. Jessick, why don't you talk a little bit about this? Should be really everybody should have this, shouldn't they?
Absolutely. What a great point, Jill. We kind of are afraid of having these conversations because talking about this can be scary. But I think part of what Sarah and I try to do is normalize these conversations. It's very empowering for folks, even at a young age, start thinking about who could make decisions for me if I can't. Heaven forbid I'm in a car accident or something. Who do I trust? Who knows me well enough to make decisions for me? And how can I get that paperwork done? So even though we think about folks when they're getting older having these discussions, you know, I'm sure Sarah does this all the time. Even at the age of 18 and older, we're encouraging good advanced care planning and hey, you're going off to college. You know, let's get this document done. Let's pick somebody so we at least have the physical document done. And let's start having some of these conversations really early. So by the time you do get elderly, by the time this becomes more and more practical or urgent, oh, I've had those discussions multiple times. It's not scary anymore for me.
That makes a whole lot of sense. Now, legally, Sarah, when someone turns 18, their parents can't answer these questions for them, can they?
That's absolutely accurate. Yeah, I was thinking about two different things here. The first is, you know, when clients come in to see me and we do an estate plan for mom and dad, a lot of times they say, oh, my kid just turned 18. They're at college. Can we do what do they need? And my answer is always good health care and financial power of attorney documents, because if anything ever happened to them and they were in the hospital, really the hospital can't even tell the parents that their kid is there. So having a good advance directive and power of attorney documents is vital to that. I always think about the story when I was in college. my dad had me sign a power of attorney document. And I had a problem. Now, this was a while ago, of course, but I think this still applies. I had a problem with my credit card while I was there, and my dad was able to solve the problem for me because I had a power of attorney in place. So, yes, we're talking about the accidents, the problems. We're also talking about the convenience of having those documents in place.
Yeah, I think parents just kind of assume, well, I'm their parents, I can take care of it. But that is not the case. So for those people who are graduating, it's probably part of a good gift to give a graduate is just this power of attorney, power of medical attorney. So definitely. So let's get into this. So what documents are we talking about specifically here, Sarah?
Yeah, so there's a number of different documents. I think the medical side of things, there's sort of two documents that we talk about. The one is the healthcare power of attorney document. That document names a healthcare power of attorney agent, someone you've selected to make your healthcare choices for you. That document outlines the different types of authority that you want to give that person. If you want to give that person the authority to admit you to a long-term care facility, withhold or withdraw a feeding tube, or make decisions while that person is pregnant, for example. Now, if you check the no boxes on those things, they're still going to happen, but we're going to require a guardianship to make those things happen. So we do encourage folks to check those yes boxes on that document. The second document is called a declaration to physicians or a living will. That document usually asks some important questions about what type of care you want if you are in a persistent vegetative state or have other illnesses that would require someone to make decisions for you. And I think Dr. Jessica can probably talk about how they look at those documents. But those are the two that concern healthcare. There's other documents as well, like a financial power of attorney, which would be equally important to fill out.
Sure. Okay, so let's go to you, Dr. Jessica. Number one, how do you get those documents? Because you can fill them out all you want, but if you just keep them in your file drawer, that's not going to help you.
It's not helpful at all, Jill. You're absolutely right. You know, hanging up on the fridge doesn't help us when we're in the hospital, right? So this is the key part, and Sarah can jump in too, is not only completing the documents, completing it with a trained facilitator, a trained attorney that knows how to do this, right? But then discussing this with others, but really importantly, hey, bring that document to your physician in the clinic. Make sure they scan it. Make sure they get it into electronic medical records. So we have access to that in the hospital. So we can review that quickly. So we don't have to make you go home and bring that to us in the hospital. So, you know, having them available, scanning them is super, super important. Probably not a bad idea if you have a loved one comes into the hospital, just in case, to bring your extra copy with you so you have it in your purse or your wallet or with you so you can show it to folks. But that's exactly, as a physician, I'm going to be looking for. If a patient can't make their own decisions, who do they trust most to make decisions for them? Who do I go to? Mm-hmm. And Sarah can talk about this also, but in the state of Wisconsin, it's not going to always automatically be my wife. It's not going to be your spouse or your adult children and things like that. So I can't, as a physician, assume that who that person's going to be. And clearly, you know, patients and families don't want me as the doc to make all the decisions for them.
Yeah, that puts you in a really difficult position when there isn't one of those and some decisions have to be made. And, you know, you're worried about the health care. You shouldn't have to worry about the legal part of it. But that is part of what you do have to be concerned about.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it's as much of a stressor, I think, to the family members of the poor patient that can't respond. And mm-hmm. I think you brought it up earlier, Jill. It's a gift. What a gift to think about this ahead of time and share these wishes and complete these documents ahead of time, as difficult as it might be. What a gift to your family so they don't have to struggle.
Right. Now, Sarah, when you help someone fill this out, all these documents, do you then take the next step for them to get them to their physician and get them in the medical records, or is that something that your client has to do for themselves?
Great question. So we have assisted folks in getting power of attorney documents to the right people. I have also made many copies for people of the documents so that they have enough to disseminate to the important people that need them. I also, though, encourage folks to send those documents or bring them right to their doctor's office. I always say they'll scan it in and make it part of your electronic medical file. And it's way better for them to have that document in advance. And then it's there if it's ever needed. It kind of sleeps, right, in that medical file until it's ready to be used. It's so important that people know where it is. Otherwise, you've just taken all that effort to do this really important thing. And then if no one knows about it, it's never going to be useful. So it's very, very important that people know that you've completed those documents. And I do want to just plug the State Bar's resources. We do have a gift to your family guide that we've made available during Healthcare Decisions Week this week. It will be available from April 9th to April 24th, free to anybody. It's available on the State Bar of Wisconsin's website and has some really great resources for folks if they're interested.
I think we have a link to that on our website too. So if you just go to wpr.org/Larry, that should be available when the recording of this is available, which is about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So you can go there too. But it's easy enough to just, you know, go in and search for. So as you had mentioned, this is Healthcare Decisions Week in Wisconsin, and the governor has signed that in. And Dr. Jessic, why is that an important thing for the governor? He does that pretty much every year, like we have mentioned. Why is it important to have that out there?
I think it's hugely important. A lot of folks still don't know what they don't know, or they make assumptions. So, you know, we take a whole week to remind folks, hey, this is still important. We still need to get this done. For those of you that got your advance directive done, awesome. For those that haven't, hey, now's a good time to be thinking about this and to complete those. So it's really great to raise that awareness for folks. Just as a reminder, I think the other piece is that, you know, for folks that have never done this before, hey, let's get them done. They're easy, and even the governor's supporting this, right? But even for folks that have had them done in the past, in the state of Wisconsin, they have laws. And one of them is, if you go through a divorce, Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, if you have a divorce, that document is null and void. So if you're saying, oh, I'm glad the governor told me to get this done last year, I got it done, I'm good to go for the next 50 years, yeah, you might want to get, well, you need to get that redone. So I think it's a great reminder for all of us to that, yeah, get them done and keep them updated.
It's kind of like a reminder to change the batteries in your smoke detector, right?
Well, and I think that's why we've picked this week, right? Because we're all reminded on April 15th to do our taxes. And we know that the two things that are sure in life are death and taxes. So in the same week that we're thinking about taxes, we're also thinking about our healthcare decisions. So that's why this week is selected. We want to make sure that we're covering all the sureties in life. So making sure you have those documents completed. And Dr. Jessica's right, divorce, it doesn't just cancel the appointment of your ex-spouse. It cancels the entire document. So even if you have ex-spouse as number one and then adult kid as number two, we don't just skip the ex-spouse. The appointment of the adult kid is also canceled. So you need to make sure to get those documents updated, looked at, need to make sure the right boxes are checked, all of that.
Wow, that's a wonderful point that I wouldn't have not have thought of, which brings me to this point, because life changes. So how often is a really good time to just look at it? I mean, every 5 years or so, do you take it out and say, oh my gosh, I don't even talk to that person anymore, I should probably update that? Do you have a kind of a schedule in mind, Sarah?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I usually advise people of the six D's. One of those D's is a decade, although I think a lot of people come in before a decade. I know I've been doing this for a little while, and during that decade, inevitably laws change, kids get older, people, your family circumstances change, people get married, have kids, this lots of changes. So the other D's all involve other life changes, decline in health, different financial circumstances, you know, lots of different things that could happen in your life that would make you want to revisit who you've appointed, if they're still appropriate, if they agree with and will follow through on the wishes that you've communicated. And I think that's one of the main messages we want to get across today, too. Even doing these documents is the most important thing, but also just communicating the wishes that you have about your end of life care, what sort of things that are important to you, so that everybody knows those things and we can actually follow through on what those wishes are.
Because I imagine that could cause a problem in the hospital room, Dr. Jessic, that somebody thinks that they have the power to do something when they actually don't. Have you had problems in that area?
Lots of problems in that area, unfortunately. And it makes a really tough health situation more difficult for family members. Mm-hmm. A lot of assumptions are going on. Hey, I'm those child, I'm the favorite child, so therefore clearly I'm the decision maker, when that hasn't been discussed or set up ahead of time, right? I think part of the problem also is that some folks actually have the documents done, but as Sarah mentioned, if you didn't discuss what your wishes are with your power of attorney, that makes it really, really difficult in those really, really crucial moments, right? Mm-hmm. So getting documents done, letting your power of attorney know that they're your power of attorney, because that comes up too, or they haven't mentioned that to them, are all really, really crucially important. So the conversation and the documentation is just really, really important.
Sure. So Sarah, you don't have to let somebody know that you've chosen them?
They don't have to, but they should.
Yeah, that would be a nice thing to tell somebody.
Yes, definitely. Mm. I often tell people, because usually when I'm helping people, we're doing more of a comprehensive plan that includes power of attorney documents. And I tell people, you know, don't tell people what's going to happen when you're gone, when you're dead. Make sure they know, though, that they're going to make decisions during your life. That is a vital communication point to have with folks. I've always taken the position that you should shout it from the rooftops, that you have your estate planning documents completed, that you have your power of attorney in place. Everybody should know that, because if the more people that know, the more likely we're going to be able to utilize that document and honor your wishes.
Well, I'm thinking there should be parties. You know, there's a party for everything else. Why don't we do a party for that?
I like parties.
Okay, yeah.
Parties are good.
Absolutely. Our guests are Sarah Micheletti, an attorney at McCarty Law LLP in Appleton, and Dr. Tim Jessic, a palliative medicine physician. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have any questions. We'll be right back. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Najel, and coming up at 11:45, we're going to talk about osteoporosis treatment and prevention. But right now, we are talking about advanced healthcare directives, and we do have a caller, Charles in Oshkosh. Go right ahead with your question.
Hi, good program. I have clients execute these documents, and a lot of them say, when are you in a persistent vegetative state or terminal state? That's the terms used in the Wisconsin Living Will. And how do I know that? And will I recover? And what is the doctor, how do they determine that a person is definitely terminal or persistent vegetative state?
Go ahead, Dr. Jessic.
Well, I'll take that. Great, great question. I think that the biggest part of this is that we want patients to have to be empowered to make their own decisions, right? This is their life. They should make their own decisions. So we take this conversation very, very seriously. At what point would we have somebody else make decisions for you? And it's very, very specific, not only legally, but also medically. We're talking about a condition called incapacity. You have to actually have two providers that evaluate a patient and say, boy, at this point, they just can't make decisions for themselves. Now, right away, we don't necessarily say this is going to be a 1 hour time where they can't make their decisions for them, or a 1 year thing, right? All we know is that in this moment, they can't make the best decisions for them because they're so ill, or because they're having such a high fever, or whatever that is. And it's in that moment where you say, hey, we need to ask somebody else to make decisions that can understand what's going on, interpret things, let us know what they want. And in this case, that's when we choose the power of attorney to do that for us. So it's very, very serious. We, on the medical side, will not take that away from a patient lightly, because it's not a light type of decision. And then we wait for a couple of days to see how things go. A lot of times folks will wake up and all of a sudden they'll be nice and alert and they can make decisions, and they shouldn't do that at that point. But it's a very specific process that we medically will take before we activate a power of attorney. And I should also say that, again, even if we activate a power of attorney and ask that power of attorney to make decisions, that's not forever. Again, if the patient's mind clears, great. We want that the patient to make their own decisions at that point.
And Charles,
Great question.
did you have a second question also?
Yeah, as far as I guess the other question was the importance of a HIPAA authorization. How does that fit in with a healthcare power of attorney? And why do you need one of those also?
Okay.
Or should you have one?
Who wants to tackle that one? Sarah?
Sure. So the HIPAA authorization is an additional document that I see often where the person authorizes another person to get their medical records. I don't think a HIPAA authorization would require the same activation as a power of attorney document. So that would just allow my sister to be able to come in and see my medical file, get medical information about me, but not make decisions for me. So the purpose of those documents is different.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for those questions, Charles. We did have a listener email to ask where they can find local help to complete advanced care planning. Sarah, can you help them out with that?
Definitely. So there's lots of resources for folks. Obviously, I'm going to advocate to see an elder law attorney or estate planning attorney to get your documents completed. But if that's not in the cards for you, there are many free resources that are available. I recommend the GWAR folks, the guardianship assistance folks. They have a great resource that's the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources. The Guardianship Support Center attorney from GWAR is great, and they have a bunch of resources on their website. There are free resources, free documents, the power of attorney documents, both healthcare, financial, and the living will or declaration to physicians document is also available online. There are some local contacts that are listed in the Wisconsin Medical Society Advanced Care Planning webpage. One of our local resources up in the Fox Valley, we have the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership that has a bunch of local resources as well.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's a lot of resources. So much
Yes.
appreciated. Let's go back to the phone. Seth in Wausau, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I make this call as a former ICU nurse who unfortunately had to see this scenario play out quite often in the intensive care unit. And I think one of the big things that's lacking and what we never talk about is actually what does it mean to be a full code versus a DNR on our advance directive paperwork? I don't think that's talked through enough. I think people maybe get nervous and just make the decision without knowing what that actually means for their healthcare. And I've seen too many people at the end of life say, I wish I would have known what this meant for my loved one because they wouldn't have wanted whatever procedure done. And end-of-life care is obviously very invasive and oftentimes very difficult to deal with. So I think just a suggestion would be to really advance information and knowledge about that aspect of advanced directives.
Okay, Seth, Dr. Jessica, could you explain what those acronyms mean, number one, and the difference between them?
Absolutely. And great comments, Seth. And thank you so much for your service in the ICU. It's such a difficult place to work. But when we talk about resuscitation and do not resuscitate, what we're specifically talking about, and this is part of what Seth was bringing up, is folks just don't know what they don't know, or they don't know what that all means. For us as providers, nurses and physicians and otherwise, what we want to know when a patient comes into the hospital specifically is, heaven forbid, their heart stops, they stop breathing, and they die. Do they want Seth and other ICU folks to try to bring them back from the dead by doing chest compressions, by putting a tube down their throat and breathing for them, and shocking the heart to try to bring them back from the dead? Super, super important for us to know how aggressive folks want to get, right? some folks say, well, yeah, try stuff if you can. But if they really understood what was involved with resuscitation and that act and what Seth and his colleagues do all the time, you might think differently. It's really interesting. If you look at the medical studies behind CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, and resuscitation in general, if someone dies in the hospital, there's only a 15% chance, 15% chance that that person will leave the hospital alive. Right? Pretty low chances. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't try this, but it's not that successful. A similar study asked the public, well, if you died in the hospital and needed to be resuscitated, what's the success rate in the hospital? The public's number, they thought 80% of them thought that you can be brought back from the dead, right? So there's already a disconnect as far as what we can do medically and kind of what people think because they've watched ER and all these different shows that are available. But this is one of the discussions. And I think this is where the living will part that Sarah brought up is really, really important. For some people, they say, listen, I lived a good life. I don't want to die. But if my heart stops, my time has come. I want to be with the Lord. I want to be with my spouse. Let me go. Don't bring me back from the dead. And by the way, kids and everybody else, don't even try to bring me back from the dead. Otherwise, I'm going to haunt you. That's up to us, medically wise, and even Sarah, you know, filling out paperwork to clarify that, make sure everyone knows what the patient's wishes are.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Seth. I really appreciate that. So, Sarah, is that something that you clarify when you're talking to people, that they understand exactly what that means?
Yes. So the two documents that I talked about, the power of attorney and the declaration to physicians, doesn't really address DNR, which is do not resuscitate. Do not resuscitate is something the physician will give you a little bracelet for, and that will indicate to first responders or hospital professionals that you do not want to be resuscitated. And that's a conversation you need to have with your physician, your healthcare provider. The documents that I complete with folks appoint someone with authority to make decisions about certain things, like withholding or throwing a feeding tube, admission to long-term care facilities. The declaration to physician talks about if you have are in a persistent vegetative state or have life-altering conditions, whether or not you want feeding tubes or life-sustaining procedures. So that declaration to physician is a what I want. The healthcare power of attorney appoints someone to execute those things. And then the third wrinkle to that scenario is the do not resuscitate bracelet.
Okay, so that the person would make those decisions, have more time to make those decisions and be able to get more facts, whereas the do not resuscitate has to be done in a moment. Dr. Jessic, if you do not have any indication what the patient wants, then I'm assuming that you do need to try to resuscitate, correct?
Absolutely. We assume they want everything done until they tell us otherwise.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
And one of the messages really that we're trying to get across today is having those power of attorney documents in place, having those conversations in advance will allow us to follow what your wishes are and appoint someone who you trust to make those choices for you. Mm-hmm. If you don't have documents in place, we could potentially be looking for a guardianship or someone that you don't want to make those choices or who doesn't know what your choices are. So having some advanced planning in place allows us to be able to follow your wishes.
Now, that brings up that I believe that there's a new state law that allows for a patient's next of kin to be appointed as their patient representative to make healthcare decisions for them. So how is that then playing out with this topic, Sarah?
Good question. So the governor signed a new law into effect at the end of March, and the moniker for that law has been the next of kin legislation. Now, I think we need to probably make sure that our listeners understand that this doesn't take the place of a power of attorney document. It does not appoint someone to make your healthcare decisions under any circumstance when you're incapacitated. It's very limited in scope. It's very limited for the time period in which that patient representative would be able to make decisions. So I think it's not, well, I don't think it's going to be enough to mean that you don't need advanced care planning. It is not enough. It's not a substitute for a good power of attorney. It's not a substitute for these conversations that you can have with your family and friends. It is not an indication of your wishes. It's not appointing someone you want to make those wishes. It's very limited in the fact that it will appoint perhaps someone in very limited circumstances when someone is incapacitated to move into a long-term care facility and only for a very short period of time. So it is not a comprehensive law that replaces advanced care planning.
Dr. Jessic, what's your point of view on that? Is that going to be helpful? Yes, no, maybe.
I think, and Sarah's the expert at this, but I think it's too soon to tell. I have my concerns as Sarah does, and mm-hmm. I would completely agree this does not replace a good advanced care planning. You want to be able to be in control of your healthcare and who you choose, right? You want to be empowered to be able to do this, and this law doesn't change that at all. So a little bit too soon to tell, but absolutely, we still need good advance directives. We want to come back next year with your Jill and say, hey, it's still really important to be doing this.
Okay. Let's go back to the phone. We have Carol in Lake County, Illinois. Go ahead, Carol.
Yes, thank you. My question relates to payable on death documents, POD documents, which I have for my mortgage, for my home, for my children. And I'm wondering if there's such a thing as a blanket POD, so you don't have to fill out beneficiary forms for bank accounts, CDs, and so on.
I can take that one. Thanks for calling, Carol. So I think one of the main things to distinguish here is that the documents that we're talking about this morning have to do with decisions made during your life. So having power of attorney documents in place will be able to appoint someone to make decisions for you if you're incapacitated or need help during your life. Power of attorney documents die with you. They don't have any effect or any meaning after your death. So when we're talking about payable upon death beneficiary designations or transfer on death beneficiary designations, those are things that apply after you are dead. And I could spend a whole nother hour talking about that particular issue. And the other nuance here, Carol, is that I heard when you called in that you're from Illinois, and states have different laws. We have different mechanisms for how things work upon your death. So I would encourage you to consult with an Illinois attorney about your options with regard to how your assets will transfer upon your death.
Thank you, Carol. And that was something I was going to bring up, too, because it is so different in each state. And I'm assuming it's the same thing for the medical profession, Dr. Jessic, that you've got licensed to practice in Wisconsin, but it's way different in every other state, right?
Absolutely right. You know, we have to follow those laws and those rules. They're for a place. And when it applies to advanced care planning, advanced directives, it applies there as well, right? Mm-hmm. Each state seems to have a little bit different variation based on statute, what's on that document. Mm-hmm. What I would say, though, is if I see somebody from Florida that has a document filled out where they picked somebody, well, maybe that document isn't valid or legal in the state of Wisconsin, but at least it gives me a really good idea who you chose or who I could start with. So
sure.
The legality is a piece of this. The practicality piece is there as well.
So for someone go ahead, Sarah.
No, sorry. I was just going to add that I review a lot of people's powers of attorney when they come in, move to Wisconsin from out of state. And I get a lot of questions, too, about the legality of that paperwork outside of the state of Wisconsin. Now, I can't comment on the latter part, but the first one, when people come to me from with a POA from Florida, for example, I want to make sure that we have the boxes checked. I'm making air quotes here, people, because I want to make sure that in Wisconsin, we have a very specific directive in the statute that says that the agent that you've appointed needs specific authority outlined written in the document that says they have the ability to admit to a nursing home, a community-based residential facility, the authority to withdraw or withhold their feeding tube, and the authority to make decisions while pregnant. So it's very important that when I'm reviewing POAs from out of state, that those certain things are outlined in that document. So You need to make very sure that the right authority is granted in those documents from out of state.
So would you suggest that someone who maybe spends half of their time in another state and in Wisconsin have both, for both states, have documents for both states?
That's a tough one. So yes, but we need to make sure to remain consistent. Also, when you execute a new healthcare power of attorney on this statutory state form in Wisconsin, that power of attorney will revoke other power of attorney documents. So we need to be very careful when we do that and make sure that if you're doing one in Florida and one in Wisconsin, that they're not revoking each other and that we know which one will supersede the other.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, but still confusing. So anyway, last words on this before we have to say goodbye to you, Dr. Jessic.
Again, thank you for this great opportunity. This is so, so important, which is why we bring it up every single year. From the medical side, we want to make sure we provide the right care for the right patient at the right time. And if we don't have these discussions early, we don't know what those decisions are. So filling out documents, appointing folks that can help make decisions for you and having these honest discussions, whether it's at a party or sometimes we jokingly say, well, you have everyone at Thanksgiving, just bring it up at Thanksgiving so everyone knows. So as you said at the very beginning of the show, Jill, this is a gift that we can share with our family members. So please get these done and have these discussions. It doesn't have to be scary. It's normalizing, it's empowering, and it's just a wonderful thing to do for your family members.
Okay, Sarah?
Yes. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Dr. Jessic. That was great. I agree 100% with everything you said. I think that this topic is so important for every single adult to take care of. Make sure we all know what your wishes are. We don't want to guess. We want to honor your wishes. We have those resources available to everybody at the state bar and through the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging. So I would encourage everyone to do your homework and get those documents completed.
Well, thank you both for spending some time with us, your valuable time, and sharing it with our listeners. We really, really appreciate it. So thank you. Dr. Tim Jessic is a doctor of osteopathy and a palliative medicine physician. There we are. Sarah Micheletti is a partner in McCartney Law in Appleton. So thank you both once again. Up next, we're going to talk about osteoporosis. So stay with us.